There are many states, I believe, I can't remember the number, but there are many states in the United States that actually allow cousins to marry. Texas, not one. New Mexico is one. So these are some issues that you'll need to be aware of if you're dealing with individuals who are related in that way. And then Anne had some issues, and we've dealt with this in the past before, where CIS was doing an inquiry with regard to individuals who marry at the bridge. So if we're saying this person's never been here, or this person maybe triggered a 212A9B bar and left, and we're saying they haven't returned, they haven't triggered 212A9C, but they presented themselves in you know, the port of entry in Piedras Negras and Eagle Pass, because the judge will go to the port of entry and marry them, we need to be very specific on that I-130 that they married at the port of entry. Or in the case if they request information, you know, we've actually pulled the application where they asked for the judge to go and show that they indeed married at the port of entry.
Yeah, because you have to be careful about the stuff that you put on the I-130, because all of that's going to follow them to the consulate. The marriage license is just going to say, you know, the county where it was issued. You know, you have to be real careful. We may have to get a declaration from the officiant saying that we were on the bridge, they were on one side, we were on the other. Just have to, you know, look ahead at all the stuff that's going to be coming down.
If you request the file from the county clerk's office, oftentimes you'll find information that will show that the person did, that the marriage was to be performed at the bridge. So do that evidence. And I would say at least on the I-130, note, port of entry. On the DS-260, note, port of entry. So there's no question about whether that person entered the United States. With regard to children, I'm assuming that many of you are familiar with the definition of children, the biological child, the stepchild. We talked about kind of declaring a common law marriage to perhaps capture a stepchild. Anne said she was dealing with some cases recently with regarding the divorce.
Yeah, so the step-parent relationship, even if the marriage that created the step-parent relationship has been terminated, you can still have the step-parent or the step-child petition for the person as long as there's a relationship that continues. You know, if they still are part of each other's lives, you're going to have to document that, but those are still approvable.
With regard to out-of-wedlock children, so sometimes it's a little bit different in the context of acquisition of citizenship. As you know, there's different standards. So even if you have an out-of-wedlock case and you haven't shown legitimation, you can still show bona fides. And we've even had cases where even the parents not listed on the birth record, and we've done the DNA testing and bona fides, and you know, those are still petitions that are viable where you can show the parent-child relationship. And then, of course, the adopted child, a very specific definition of the adopted child. In addition to the Hague issues that we're going to talk about in a little bit different, but the adopted child definition is very important in terms of timing before their 16th birthday. Now we've got the Hague restrictions because we have to include certain things in that adoption decree. And then also we have the exception with when they're adopted together with a sibling. In that case, they can be under the age of 18. And then meet the definition of adopted child once they have the 2 years in physical and legal custody post-adoption before filing the I-130. Okay, so Hague is a topic that not everyone likes to discuss. It's something that we've been doing in our office, and I at the national conference this summer, there was a panel on that, and I think Irene was on that panel talking about Hague restrictions. Has anybody done a Hague petition, an adoption petition with Hague issues? So basically right now, I think the overall picture with what we're seeing with regard to adopted children, and then Hague came into place after 2008, and we have, these are the kinds of questions you want to ask. So if somebody comes to you and they say, I want to immigrate this child who I've lawfully adopted, or let's say somebody comes to you and says, I really want to adopt this child, and it's a small child, right? And you're going to be thinking about inadmissibility issues and all those things, you know, already in your head. One of the general things that we need to think about, because this is what we're seeing with adopted children, even if we're able to overcome the Hague issues, is the reasons behind the adoption. Okay, so the government more and more is asking about the intent of the adoption. So we know that you go into state court, you have to show it's in the best interest of the child, and you need to show that these people are adopting this child for legitimate reasons as established in state court. And CIS, as you know, because they're doing this in other kinds of petitions, SIJS petitions and other things, they're questioning the nature of that adoption. why it is that you adopted this child. What was your reasoning for adopting this child? What is the relationship with this adopted child and their biological parents? I've had RFEs where they've said, I'd like to know, list all the dates and times that this biological parent has had contact with this adopted child. Because in addition to some of these other issues, the general overall picture is they want to make sure that there was no fraud, that there was no malintent when this child was adopted. So if someone comes to you, I would suggest that you counsel them if they haven't adopted this child about the reasonings and prepare them that they would be subjected to scrutiny if they adopt this child solely for an immigration benefit. In addition to that evaluation, if somebody comes to you in two different circumstances, so they've already adopted the child, you'll need to figure out if you have to do some Hague cleanup. If they haven't adopted the child, then you want to go through the Hague restrictions and make sure this is something that can happen. And the Hague restrictions basically apply whether it's a Hague country. So if many of us are dealing with Mexicans, they are members of the Hague Convention. You always want to look at the country. I just saw one recently that we are going to do, and we find the adoption was good. From Indonesia, that's not a Hague country. Was the adoption entered into after 2008? Now we're dealing with more recent adoptions. Back in 2013, when the first memo came out, and the last memo that recently came out on Hague that has, and we do cite it in the article, that has other issues, came out just last fall, just last November of 2017. So we're dealing with the 2008 date. The Hague Convention only applies if they're a citizen of a Hague country, right? Remember, and the adoptive parent is a habitual resident of the United States.